I'm going to act named Wes. I was really hoping that lady sharing next door would be done, and I think they have a guy over there now. This is something I've always wanted to do since I started coming to these conventions, and now that I'm doing it, I really don't want to. I want to thank the programming committee and Laura for suggesting that I come out here. Laura messaged me on Facebook and asked if she could give my number to some lady on programming, and I said, yeah, that was okay. And I remember laying in bed all night that night, hoping they don't give me some just fucked up topic that I have to share on. A couple of years ago, my friend Charlie had to do a binge of emotional sorrow. And he told me he had to do that workshop. I'm like, dude, are you all right? Like, it's like, you know, if you get asked to do staying clean, living dirty, there's probably some things you should need to look at. But I'm here to do youth and recovery, and thankfully, that's my story. Like Kit, I got here at 18 years old. My clean date is March 12, 2012. I just celebrated 6 years clean this past March. One of the craziest things is when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I thought this was just another place that I wasn't going to belong. If you're in here and you're young, I want you to hear what I say right now is, I've never shot dope, I've never smoked crack, I've never even been arrested, and I did a fine job of destroying my life without all of those things, man. Kit was talking about the first step, and there's a question in the first step that says, is my disease bad enough if I don't compare it to anybody else's? And when I was at the end of my road, I was homeless. I had completely destroyed the relationship I had with my family. I had a bunch of goals for myself when I was young. I got into college. I failed out of college. Was a college dropout. My girlfriend had left, and I had absolutely nothing. I was a broken, hopeless, desperate, and lonely individual. And what I'll tell you is, when I came here, this was probably the last thing that I thought I would be doing. It really was not my plan to stay clean when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And they say it a lot in my area, Narcotics Anonymous will change you without your permission. I don't know what happened along the way. I don't know when it clicked. I don't know why I'm still here, but like, I'm willing to serve when I'm asked. So one of the craziest things, or one of the weirdest things about me, too, when I came here, I felt like I didn't belong, because I heard all these people sharing about, you know, they shot dope for 25 years in D.C., and they've been arrested, and they've been to prison, locked up, and all this stuff. And that's not my story. In case you can't tell, I'm pretty soft. The only thing I have on my record is a speeding ticket, and it's been expunged. Growing up, man, I had a very good upbringing. I came in here and I heard people talking about they had addict parents, and they came from broken homes, and they moved around a lot, and that wasn't my story, man. I grew up in Towson, and both of my parents have great careers. They've been together since they've been in eighth grade. I'm the oldest of three kids, and they gave me every single opportunity and tool that I need to be a functioning, contributing member of society. They gave me everything. And for some reason, by 18 years old, I couldn't get out the bathroom. I'm here because I suffer from a perpetual sense of incompleteness, man. I suffer from the disease of addiction, and I didn't know what was wrong with me for the longest time. Growing up, man, like Kit said, I just felt like I never fit in, man. I grew up playing lacrosse in the Baltimore County area, and the people that we grew up with and the families that we grew up with, it was the most hoity-toity, bougie, rich shit ever. Like, there was this one family, the Kellys. They had a marble in-ground pool in their backyard and a basketball court in their basement, a full-length basketball court in their basement. And we were like the poorest out of the rich family. Like, when all their kids would turn 16, they would get Porsches and BMWs and everything. And when I turned 16, my mom gave me her 2001 golden Honda Odyssey. And I just felt, even though I had everything that I needed to be successful and happy, I just felt like I still wasn't good enough, man. It talks about in the triangle of self-obsession, you know, as young kids, as long as we are given our basic needs, you know, food, clothing, shelter, as long as our basic needs are met, then we are content. And as we grow up, we begin to develop wants and desires for our lives. We want things, you know, we want to have relationships and jobs and careers. But it says in there, as addicts along the way, we falter because when we don't get these things that we want, we react to them with resentment, anger, and fear. And for me, what I found was, I wanted all this stuff, but I didn't want to do any of the work. Because all these things, all these actions that we do build self-esteem. And I wanted self-esteem. I wanted self-worth. I wanted to feel good about myself, but I didn't want to work for it. So what I found as an addict is that I found it much easier to just change the way I felt than do any work. And it started with sports, and it started with having friends, and it started with getting good grades. And eventually it turned to drugs. And you know, God, he's really loud. I'm not a screamer at all, man. Jesus. Anyway, so I started using when I was 13, and it started with cheap beer and shitty weed, and, you know, it progressed to the point where I was homeless. I was picking cigarette butts out the gutter. The money was gone. The drugs were gone. The people were gone, and I was left with just me. Oh, don't start this. This stuff happened yesterday. If they would have told me that by the end of my road, I was going to pawn every single piece of jewelry my mother ever owned, if they would have told me that years down the road, I was going to destroy every single meaningful relationship I had, if they would have told me that years down the road, as a heterosexual male, I was going to be committing sexual acts with men just to get one more, I would have done that shit anyway, because I was so caught up in obsession and compulsion that I would do anything that I needed to do to change the way I felt right now. Because I suffer from complete and total self-centeredness, and to me what self-centeredness is the belief system that my feelings are more important than anything in the world. My feelings are more important than my health. My feelings are more important than the well-being of my family, my relationships, my grades, my careers, everything. I will do anything and everything that I can to change the way I feel and feel better right now. So the thing about it is like when you're smoking weed and drinking beer, it's pretty easy to get. But as the drug use progresses and you begin to go along in your using career, the ways and means to get one more become more drastic. The things that we need to do to get one more become more drastic. And like, what happened is along a period of time, like, I knew right from wrong. I knew it was wrong to lie. I knew it was wrong to steal. I knew it was wrong to hurt people. But I can't practice spiritual principles and be a using addict. And what happened is as I continued to use, every time that I compromised a moral or a value to get one more, I lost a piece of my spirit. So by the time I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I was completely broken. At the end of the road, I was sleeping outside. And I had absolutely nothing. And, you know, if you're at a convention, you're probably a little bit interested in NA. But whenever I share regular meetings, I tell people, man, if you're in here to get your kids back, your wife back, you're here on a court slip or anything like that, just stay. If you think it's weird, you don't know what the hell's going on, you don't like the coffee, you don't like talking about your feelings, one thing I always say is normal people do not end up in Narcotics Anonymous. If you're here right now, it's probably a pretty strong reason why you're here. So what happened to me was I decided to go to a treatment center with the help of my family, and they bailed me out yet again. And I went into treatment, and when I got clean, I was 105 pounds. My cheeks were touching inside of my mouth. I had scabs all over my face. And I just didn't understand how the hell I got there. But luckily, at this treatment center, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through H&I. And these people would bring these meetings in, and I still couldn't relate. They had the biker guys come in, they had the gangster guys come in, they had, you know, all these other people come in, and I couldn't get with what they were talking about, man. And there was this one day, this nerdy-looking white guy came in, and he had on a pastel salmon-colored polo and khaki shorts and some Sperry's and these thick frame and some thick frame glasses, and I thought he worked there. I thought he was like one of the owners or something. And he came in and he sat up front, and he was actually sharing the NA meeting. And he talked about getting clean at 18 years old. He talked about having a wife who had over 30 years clean. He talked about having both their kids in college who had never seen them use. And that guy is actually my sponsor today, and he celebrated 30 years clean this past November. And he is a nerd, man. He's like, he's square as they come. And I thought, I'm like, how the hell is this guy an addict? But anyway, for the first time in my life, I was able to compare it with what somebody was talking about when it came to addiction. And what he told me was, and it's a stupid cliche we say in here all the time, you can't think your way into a new way of living, you got to live your way into a new way of thinking. Because what had happened to me is I came in here with this entire belief system that I had to lie to people to get what I wanted. I had to manipulate people to get what I wanted. I had to compromise my value system to get what I wanted. And when we come in here with that same thought pattern, that same mentality, that's all we have to run off of. So instead of trying to think my way out of every single situation that I was in, maybe if I just take some simple, small directions from the people who have been here before me, that I'll end up okay. So the first thing that I did was I went to a recovery house, and that was a bit of an experience for me. There was about 30 dudes in there. Some of them were old enough to be my father. And I can remember we lived in this this dormitory upstairs. They had the top level all blocked off with like cubicles. And I moved up there. It was me and five other guys up there. And within a week, all five of them were gone. And it's crazy, man. I think back about all those guys that I knew in early recovery. And a lot of them aren't here anymore. A lot of them have passed away. A lot of them have gone back out. A lot of them have decided that they were normal. Good Lord. What I did for my first 6 months clean, I did what I like to call halfway house recovery. And if you're young in here, you can probably understand what I'm about to say. For the first 6 months of my clean time, I smoked two packs of Newports every single day. I spent all of my food stamps on energy drinks. I chased girls around to little, yeah, poor results there. And I did anything and everything that I could to reach outside of myself to fix what was wrong inside of myself, my feelings. And the second step it talks about, in Narcotics Anonymous, insanity is often described as the belief that we can take something outside of ourselves, drugs, power, sex, food, to fix our feelings. And that was the only solution that I thought I had, because that's what I've been doing for so long. And I'll tell this story because I tell it a lot. So I was working at a dry cleaner's when I first got clean, Zips Dry Cleaners. I was making $7.50 an hour, and for some reason when I had about 60, 90 days clean, I developed a very unhealthy obsession with expensive cologne. I don't know why. But when I was at the end of my road, I was literally picking cigarette butts out of the gutter and smoking them. And now with 60 days clean, I have a $100 a week habit on buying cologne. So every Friday I would get paid and I would run to the drugstore and I would buy Polo Black, Versace Blue, Giorgio Armani. And I would do this and put on the cologne and go to a meeting and get a hug from a girl, and she would tell me I smell good. And I would eat nothing but peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for 2 weeks just so I could get that compliment, right? Yeah, that is the reality of the disease of addiction. No matter what it is, if it makes me feel better about myself, I'll do it till I'm sick of it, right? And what I found was 6 months clean, that I had absolutely not changed at all. The cigarettes wouldn't do it for me anymore. The cologne wouldn't do it for me anymore. I have a nice collection now that I never use. The energy drinks wouldn't do it anymore. And what I'll tell you is I didn't get clean to be miserable. So I made a decision to get a sponsor because I learned that I can buy pleasure. I can buy all these things, but I can't buy happiness. And when I came to these rooms, I saw people who were genuinely happy, who had careers and families and kids, and they loved their life, and that was exactly what I wanted. So I got a sponsor, and I started working steps, and my first sponsor, he scared the hell out of me, man. It's funny we talk about the diversity in here. I'm 5'6", and I'm white, and I have red hair. And my first sponsor, he was 52 years old. He's 6'3", he's black, and he has dreads. And we'd hang out all the time, and we'd be out in public, and I would always think, how the hell do people think we know each other? Because we couldn't be any more opposites, man. But what happened is he got me started on my first three steps, and I would go over to his house, and we'd go over the step work, and I'd see how he interacted with his wife and his kids and everything, and my life began to change. We would go to this sponsorship family meeting that we would have every Saturday at our friend Marcus's house. And basically what it was is we would all share about what's going on in our lives today, and then everybody else in the sponsorship family would just roast you for like an hour. So I got clean in an area where there was a lot of predecessors, a lot of clean time. And they didn't care how old I was. They didn't care what drugs I had done. They kind of just used to put their foot in my ass, and that was exactly what I needed. So I remember I had shared this one day, and I shared like the same old sad story that I'm 18, I don't think I belong here, and blah, da, 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 da. And I can remember this guy, Marcus C., said to me, he said, if your life fell apart that quickly, don't you think you belong here? And that was really where my journey began, man. With about a year clean and some consulting from my grand sponsor and my sponsor, I decided to get into a relationship. I asked my grand sponsor first, and he said, you should probably wait until you finish your fourth step to get in a relationship. And I asked my sponsor second, and he said, if you want to learn some shit about yourself, get in a relationship. I said, my sponsor knows what he's talking about. I'm gonna go with exactly what he said. So, and you know what? The funny thing about it is, looking back on it, we were two 19-year-old kids with barely a year clean. We didn't know what the hell was going on. And you know, the funny thing about relationships is you're either gonna stay together forever or it's gonna end. I know that's like profound and very strange, but you know. At that time in our lives, at least at that time in my life, I had just celebrated a year clean. I was floating around the room, telling everybody with 20 years clean how to live. And I thought, I thought I had all the answers. The novelty of being clean had not yet worn off. So, anyway, that relationship ended about after a year and some change, and it was a bad breakup. You know, if you've ever been in an NA breakup, it's like, you know, my network sitting on this half of the room, her network sitting on that half of the room, and we're both like in a battle to see who can recover faster from it, and like posting about it on Facebook and everything. Yeah, like, no, I'm spiritual, like, yeah, and it was a fucking mess. And what had happened was she got involved with a good friend of mine and would come to my home group with him. And I honestly just wanted to kill the guy. And he was a very good speaker in our area. So it seemed like twice a week, a meeting I would go to, he would be speaking at. And I would be sitting in the back, and I'm like, he ain't about shit. Man, fuck him, man. And I'm trying to get everybody else to agree with me, right? You know, misery loves company. And so this went on for a couple months, and I remember one night I went to a meeting, and I asked the guy who's the speaker, who was a friend of mine. I said, hey, who's doing the meeting? He said, oh, so-and-so's doing the meeting. And I'm like, God damn it. And I was trying to call my sponsor, and he wasn't answering. And I said, you know what, man? Fuck it. I sat up in the front row. I listened to him share. And I got up after the meeting and I gave him a hug. And immediately, all those feelings of inadequacy, all those feelings of insecurity, all those feelings of anger and hatred just immediately went away. And for me, that was the first time I had like a real spiritual experience in here. In doing something that I didn't want to do and getting a positive result out of it. Because what it was like is like, you know, I'd be outside of the meetings and I'd be talking with all my friends and he'd come up and I'd put on the, you know, I don't like you mask thing. And, you know, if I have to act like that in Narcotics Anonymous, I have to come to a meeting where it should be considered my home and put on a mask and act a certain way. How free am I really? So, you know, there was a topic, God delivers the best gifts and the worst packages, the topic yesterday of a workshop, and I feel like that was very pertinent to that situation because I had struggled with it for a long time. It was my first relationship clean. It was a natural process of life, you know, and I was hurt, man. I came in the rooms and I shared about it, and what worked for me was there's a guy in my home group who had celebrated, and he talked about how in the period of like 2 years, his wife was murdered. His son was killed in Iraq, and his sister had died from lung cancer. And then there was another guy in my home group. Our home group's on Sunday. His mother died on Sunday morning, and then he came and celebrated that Sunday night on the same day his mother died. And I see and hear people go through these things in here, and I realize that my problems are not as big as I make them out to be, man. And, you know, people in here carried me through that, and I got to the other side of it, and it was great. I was driving down here yesterday, so I drove down here by myself, and it was a very weird experience because for the last couple years that I've been coming here, I've always driven down with a big crowd of people. If you're in here and you're new and you have friends and people are in your network with the same amount of clean time, there's a pretty good chance they're probably not going to be here next year. I had friends with multiple years clean that I lived with, that I told secrets to, that I loved, that I cared about, and they're all gone. And this is not to be morbid, this is to talk about the reality of this disease, man. I lived in a house in Cape St. Clair with five of my best friends that all had multiple years clean, and I don't see any of them anymore. Three of them used, and two of them decided they were normal. And sometimes in here, we can forget that commitment is a spiritual principle. And you know what? Do I always want to call my sponsor? No. Do I always want to write step work? No. Do I always want to go to my home group? Fuck no. But the thing about it is, there's a difference between what's right and what's easy. And when I continue to do the right thing over and over and over and over and over again, what happens is it creates a spirit in me that I probably couldn't quit this even if I wanted to. And it's sad, man. A good friend of mine says, sometimes around here, if you're standing on principle, be prepared to stand alone. And like in the last year, my network has completely changed. I've got more involved with some new people. I've got some new sponsees that I take around. And I pray that they get back, man. A lot of people have been dying lately, and it's a sad situation. A couple good things that I like to share about, too, is so when I got out of high school, I went to University of Maryland College Park, and I failed out of college. After 2 weeks of being there, I kind of resigned to the fact that this was not going to work. I was in recovery. I had maybe two years clean. I was working shitty jobs, making no money, and I wanted more for my life, man. If you're in here and you're young, and it doesn't matter what age you are, if you want something more for your life, you can get anything you want in here. So I decided to go back to school, right? So I did the same thing the kid did. I took one class at a time. I took two classes at a time. Took three classes. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm going over and I'm sharing meetings and I'm working and I'm going to school and doing all this stuff and balancing everything. And I decided to transfer to Towson University. And I'm a software engineering major there, so I'm a bit of a nerd. And yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you know what? So I was there. And I share this story a lot. I was there my first semester, and I can remember sitting in class, and I was sitting in Calculus 1. And, you know, it was, my teacher was from Iran. Her name was Andra Sharista, and she had a very thick accent. I couldn't understand anything that was going on. And my disease was in my ear telling me, how the hell did you even get here? You should probably just quit now. You're going to fail anyway. Why don't you just give up? You're not worth anything. If these people knew who you really were, you wouldn't even be allowed to be here. And you know, the thing about Narcotics Anonymous and working the steps is like, that voice still talks to me, but it doesn't talk as loudly as it used to. So I did exactly what I did when I came to these meetings, man. I sat up front. When I didn't understand something, I raised my hand and I asked. I went to office hours, I studied, I worked hard, and you know, I finished that semester and I was signing up for my fall classes and I found out that I had made the dean's list there. And that wasn't supposed to be me, man. I was supposed to die using. And just this past Friday, I actually submitted my application to grad school so I can get a master's degree. Yeah. Yeah, this is the last thing I thought I would be doing when I came here. I'll share this one last story because I like to share it a lot. I dated this girl a couple years ago, and she was a police officer. And, So, it was pretty cool because her and I were really good friends before we started dating. We were friends for quite some time, and then we started dating. And she's a police officer in Baltimore City, so she would talk to me about her job, and all she sees down there is heroin and, you know, people killing each other and all that stuff. And her mom was an alcoholic, has been an alcoholic her entire life, has been in and out of her life, moved her around a ton of places when she was a kid. So she's had a pretty good view of the disease of addiction. And I told her that I was in recovery and all that stuff. And long story short, it didn't work out. But one day we were sitting on her couch watching a movie. And she turns to me and says, you know, after everything I've experienced with my work and with my mom and everything, I never thought an addict could be somebody like you. Our primary purpose in here is to carry the message. You know, so it's very easy for us to carry the message in these rooms, but it's a lot harder for us to carry the message outside. You know, for some people, we may be the only basic text they ever see. And if they have a family member, a coworker, a friend who is struggling with the disease of addiction, and their only interaction with somebody in Narcotics Anonymous is, damn, he's an asshole, they may not send that person here and they can get the help they need and save their life. My life has been changed immeasurably from this program, man. I don't know where I would be without it. Like I said now, man, everything is great. I've got a sponsor. I got a home group. I drive there an hour every single week on Sunday nights, even during football season. And I'm committed, man. I don't forget what it was like when I walked in these rooms. Again, now I can finally enjoy the convention because I've been nervous as fuck all weekend. So now that this is over, I'm good. So I'm going to wrap it up here, man. Listen, if you're new and you're young, work for it. Through work and prayer, you can get anything you want in here. Thanks for letting me share.